This show proudly sponsored by Real American Freestyle Wrestling.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. I'm Brian Kilmeade. Welcome to the latest minutes of the Brian Kilmeade Show. This hour, we're going to be joined by Rich Lowry, editor of the National Review, author of The Case for Nationalism. And also, keep in mind, too, we got the Patriot Awards coming up November 6th. Make the trip. A lot of people went. I know it was in Tennessee for a while. We're in a different locations over in Hollywood, Florida. Now we're on Long Island. It's there. You get hotels there. There's not a ton of hotels, but it's fun to travel. And it's going to be a great show. I promise you, you're going to be shocked about who shows up. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
We have to make clear that when the boot of the NYPD is on your neck, it's been laced by the IDF.
Isn't that nice? That is Zohran Mamdani in 2023. This guy's a real piece of work. Yeah, the IDF, if the boot of the NYPD is on your neck, the IDF has the laces. Off your election, 6 days away. Record turnout already in Virginia, New Jersey, and yes, New York City. What it means for the contenders.
Number two.
I'm a military spouse, and when the 15 came around, and we didn't have to worry about our check, and the first is coming, and there are people that need food.
I usually have my mother over for Thanksgiving, and I don't even know how I'm going to do that. There's no way I can afford a turkey.
Shutdown causing great pain for federal workers. SNAP recipients and more. If both are to blame, why are Republicans' approval ratings improving?
Number one.
We're signing one trade deal after another to balance our relationships on the basis of reciprocity. These agreements will be incredible victories for all of us because everyone is better off when we have stable partnerships, not plagued by chronic problems and imbalances.
Yep, Trump trip back is on the backstretch now. He's racking up investments and trade deals with big deals tomorrow, I think, on Thursday with China awaiting and a possible agreement with the president, something they could actually sign rather than hearing about framework. Look, if they get a framework, I know it's advancement, but it's just dragging things out. The markets are looking for a deal, and markets have been up all week long. They're up at over 48,000 now, up 112 points. So what has the president done so far? He just signed, and it's so funny. I opened up the show, and you know, when you go online, I don't buy any newspapers. I'm sure you don't either, but I download subscriptions. And the headline on the New York Times was South Korea. A lot of, you know, I'll just paraphrase. A lot of ceremony, a lot of warm feelings, but no trade deal. Then Trump goes on live at about 20 minutes later and says, "We have a deal." So they have a trade deal with South Korea. Some highlights: $150 billion investment in shipbuilding. What we're doing to show you how aggressively we're pursuing our lack of shipbuilding, we're building out the infrastructure here with Japan, is taking over one of our shipyards and building American ships, you know, Japanese technology and however that's going to work out, but they're going to build them. They also contracted shipbuilders in Norway, and now they have South Korea, $150 billion investment in shipbuilding in the U.S., $200 billion just general investment and a pledge. They also pledged to build up their defense, as does Taiwan. Malaysia did a rare earth deal with us, and now it doesn't look like there's going to be a visit from North Korea, but South Korea came out and said, listen, you want to go to Kim Jong-un? We don't take it personal. We actually think it makes it better to keep dialogue up. What I'm really excited about is the China deal, because they are overflowing with optimism. They're going to have a big announcement shortly. What is it? On fentanyl. They're actually going to enforce it, and some of the incentive is we're going to cut down the tariff, another 10% if they enforce fentanyl. What I'm hoping is we know exactly where it's coming from, and so does President Xi. In that oppressive society that has social media give you social media scores, they watch everything that you do. They're so paranoid about being overthrown. Now they can't figure out where fentanyl precursors are coming from. They know exactly where it is. I'm sure we can hand them a map and say, see these circles? That's where it's coming from. You know where it's heading? It's heading to Mexico. We know what ships they're on. Here are the tail numbers. If they call them tail numbers, I'm not sure what they do on these ships. So they got to stop it. You know, there's a big story, too, about the Opium War, and they're still not over the 19th century battle with the British. Can someone tell them the British and the Americans are different people? and the imperialistic nature of Britain is not the American nature. We just have an ally called Taiwan, South Korea, Japan, the Philippines in the region. And we don't want to see you harassing them and buzzing them and taking over islands arbitrarily, especially not Taiwan. They're going to bring up Taiwan. The word is we're going to just glide right past it. Nothing's going to change about the status. They're not going to make any statement promising that Taiwan is not an independent country or not promising it. They will just leave it out. With Japan, $10 billion in investment, $400 billion in energy investment. And as previously was agreed on, $550 billion worth of strategic investment in our country. These deals are already done on this trip. Any other president, they'd be talking about this nonstop. With this president, they say, well, the president loves when they play out the red carpet. He loves the pomp and circumstance. He, you know, he's dancing even though there's a shutdown. This guy went over to the Gulf states in the Middle East. It went unbelievably well, but he didn't say, hey, aren't we great and aren't you great? He said, how would you like to invest in us? You got a ton of money. You need technology. We could build it here. We need the investment there. So that's called progress. Our leader being treated with respect is respect to us. And he knows that. He's not Donald Trump, the Trump builder. It's not Donald Trump, the host of The Apprentice. He's not a celebrity who doesn't want to build a casino. He's saying, shake my hand for my country. Build a ballroom for the country. If they said it's not going to be done until 2027 or 2029, I'm sure why it's going to take that long. But someone said that. He's not even going to have a chance to use it. So here's Donald Trump. Cut one.
We had a tremendous meeting today with South Korea. I think the meeting was, a lot was determined, very much determined. And we made our deal. We pretty much finalized a trade deal. And we discussed some other things having to do with national security.
So he talked about that. He also said that when it comes to Taiwan, they're not going to get cornered into Taiwan. I know the president in the past has said, yeah, what's the big deal with Taiwan? Why are you so obsessed with it? Remember the first call he made from, or the first world leader call that he received, I believe, when he was in Trump Tower, when he was president-elect, was from the Taiwanese leader. It caused such an uproar. Here he is on Air Force One, on the Wall Street Journal story that said China's going to push him to concede to the language when it comes to Taiwan. Cut five.
How much do you expect Xi to try to push you on Taiwan?
I don't know that we'll even speak about Taiwan. I'm not sure. I mean, he may want to ask about it. There's not that much to ask about it. You know, Taiwan is Taiwan.
That's what he should say, by the way. Because normally people are drilling down on what exactly to say. Remember, Tony Blinken came out, as Secretary of State without a president, came out and said, we do not see Taiwan as an independent state. We see it as part of China, something similar to that. And that was an acquiescence. But then Joe Biden came out and said, if Taiwan's attack, well, back them up. Evidently, we weren't supposed to say that. But when you have a president who just blurts things out, that's what happens. So we had Michael Pillsbury on the show yesterday, and this is what he told me. Before I get too excited, and I said, Michael, we should probably have booked you because he's the ultimate China expert and Trump really likes him. I said, I should probably have booked you on Friday. But this is what he said. Cut eight.
There's no sort of checklist. Okay, now we talk about Taiwan. Now we talk about ring magnets. That's what concerns me always, is when you don't have a draft communique ready to be signed by the two leaders, which they've made clear they don't have yet, things can go bad.
And they talk about enforcement. I think they're going to get something done. I just think that the Treasury Secretary, Jamison Greer, the trade rep, Ambassador, they have already done so much work. I wouldn't think they'd be speaking so optimistically because they don't want to let people down. In other words, usually publicly you understate it in order to really be impressive. So Cameron Hamilton's a former Navy SEAL, great knowledge of the region. He said this about what he sees about China and Taiwan and China's obsession with the island. Cut 12.
With the defense of Taiwan, that's kind of an odd anomaly that's been analyzed throughout various different circles. China could certainly take Taiwan. They have the military force and capability to do so, but it would be catastrophic to their national defense, and it would be catastrophic to their economy to do so. I think they understand this. They're far more pragmatic than people give credit, but they're here, and they're trying to bolster some kind of strength and legitimacy.
Yeah. We'll see what happens. The only reason, this is why I'm optimistic that something's going to happen. Not that I don't think China's going to cheat, not that I think they're dependable, but what happens is when you do deals with an adversary or competitor, you got to make sure you have leverage to react and you have the least leverage possible. And the most leverage they have over us is pharmaceuticals and rare earth. We have over them is they need us. They need us to buy their products. We are the ultimate consumer nation. If they cannot, we cannot legitimately buy their products, they will be devastated, crestfallen, especially if we combine with Europe. I just talked to the European Parliament president, European Union president, Parliament president. And she said flat out, and I ran off the trade deal that we know with the EU. Goes, this is the deal we're working with. We have 727 parliament members that are signing off on it. This is what we're working with. We're going to be tight with the U.S. And if you put the EU and the U.S. speaking from the same hymn book, China's got to pay attention. And if they don't comply, the president's not signing a deal in 2019 knowing that his term is up in 2020. He's signing it in 2025 knowing his term is up in 28. But he'll be out in 2029, the January of that year. So if you're going to screw him, okay, a few months in, you're not buying soybeans. A few months in, you're starting to pull back on rare earth. All right, we're not going to get a deal. We're going to have huge tariffs. We're going to have a trade war. I think if China wanted a trade war, President Trump gave them an opportunity to have a trade war. They chose not to have a trade war because they have enough problems. If you just take a few minutes, I know everyone's got their own lives, but just take a few minutes and just read about what's going on with commercial and residential real estate in China. It used to be how they were going to retire. Everything was going up in value. So they buy a house, I'll buy an apartment, I'll move in the city, it's going to work. It's not working. Everything is cratering. The jobs aren't there. A whole generation is having trouble finding those jobs. They're proud of the way they're automating manufacturing. They're probably not proud that a lot of people have no jobs. And now people are looking at China and saying, yeah, it's kind of expensive to make things there. I'm going to go to Thailand. I'm going to go to Vietnam. I might even go to Central and South America to build my stuff. Plus, you guys are oppressive. At any moment, you steal our intellectual property. At any moment, you could decide, I'm going to make that almost impossible for you to do business here. And they're not great consumers. Why? Because they're very tight with their money. They don't have any social safety net. All this information is out there. And if it's out there publicly, can you imagine what the numbers that Scott Bessent is seeing in Treasury and Howard Lutnick is seeing at Commerce to see how vulnerable they are? 1-866-408-7669. I only got through one talking point. I'm going to get through more. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. I'm Brian Kilmeade. It gives me great pleasure to tell you that Simply Safe is now available at 50% off because you're listening to this podcast. So go to simplysafe.com/Brian. Now, why is Simply Safe so perfect? Number one, it's easily put in. Number two, it's unbelievably effective. Number three, they're using AI now to stop the break-in, not just catch the people that are doing it, but to stop them before they infiltrate your life and destroy your personal property. I personally trust these people. This is a game changer. The agents take action while the intruder is still on the outside. They confront the intruder, letting them know they're being watched on camera, and you know they're going to head for the hills because they're going to head right to prison if they don't, and hopefully they still will. There are no long-term contracts. There are no hidden fees. Get this. The U.S. News & World Report, they named them, Simply Safe, the best home security system. There's a 60-day money-back guarantee. So what price can you put on safety? Well, Simply Safe is easy to install. They're always improving the product, and it's affordable. Why can't you be safe? The answer is, of course you can. Go get Simply Safe. Save your 50% by going to simplysafe.com/Brian. Get it.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Well, she has been very aggressive with the threats on the rare earths, etc. And big picture, China's economy is not growing at the breakneck pace that it once was. And she really does need the U.S. market. You know, his whole kind of political structure is based on continuing to provide prosperity. So when the economy is faltering, when real estate is overheated, et cetera, this is a big problem. And China overall is very dependent on energy imports, including Russian oil, and on importing food as well, and on the sea lanes that bring all that in. So she has a lot at stake in the meeting with President Donald Trump.
So that was Rebecca Grant and talking about President Xi. There's a lot at stake there because I remember with President, I think it was President Bush, that he talked to the leader of China and he said, what's your number one worry every day? And he said, jobs. You know, we have 3 billion people, and if I can't get them work and I can't grow the economy and I don't want a population that doesn't work. And right now they have an unemployment number. We can't believe any of their numbers, but let's just assume that the number is semi-accurate. There's a huge problem of young people graduating college and either not getting and not able to get a job or not trying. This is how desperate they're getting. They're now going after the colleges. If they graduate students, they can't get a job. Do you believe that? And you know what they do. They disappear people. So that's why people come here. And of course, they're forced to spy on us. I disagree. People ask, when do you disagree with President Trump? I disagree with this statement President Trump said. He said, I'd like 600,000 Chinese students coming here. No, because they're all obligated to spy. They got their families back home. If they're at Harvard University working in research, they're almost obligated by the state, threatening of their life, to give over some of that material. So we'll see what happens. It's going to be interesting. 9 o'clock their time, in the morning our time. We think we'll be leaking things out during the day about more details. I think the Wall Street Journal has the most detailed report about things they're going to agree on. Fentanyl, immediately buying soybeans. Farmers are going to be happy. The prices are good. Our stuff is the best. And then they're going to have an agreement, we believe, on shipping lanes, we think. And we also are going to talk about rare earth, at least for a year, guaranteed a certain level of distribution. Here's Josh Holmes, Cut 11.
It's a long-held goal of the Chinese to weaken that relationship, but I think you heard Secretary of State Marco Rubio speak very clearly to the fact that that's not going to happen. But furthermore, I think if there's any lesson of the Trump administration, it's that he doesn't negotiate from a position of weakness, and that certainly would be one. What he's talking about is trying to lay a predicate for a negotiation that deals with things like fentanyl and fentanyl imports. Things that, he's like a dog on a bone on that issue. Seen it in a bunch of different countries. Well, China is the most significant purveyor of this, and that is what he's going to be focused on. But when it comes to Taiwan, I think he understands the strategic import of all of that, and he's certainly not going to negotiate from a position of weakness.
Absolutely not. So lastly, on the lesson for this block, on the shutdown, we're going on to, you know, it's weeks now. So we have 28 days, 29 days in. Senator Chris Coons, somebody who usually doesn't say so ridiculous things, but says the truth. And this sadly is the truth. It's sad for the people that are being denied their SNAP food, their military pay, including air traffic controllers, TSA agents. Why are the Democrats refusing to vote for a continuing resolution, even though it's Biden-level spending? Cut 17.
Republicans control the House, the Senate, and the White House. Frankly, this is our only moment of leverage. And although a very unpleasant tool to use, it's gotten us focused on what we have to do to change direction on health care.
Your health care program. This is Obamacare that needs subsidies on the pandemic levels that were supposed to evaporate. And because they're evaporating, it's time for Republicans to extend it. While we have $37 trillion in debt. So you create this program, you bolster this program, you subsidize this program, and now that Republicans are in charge, they're not looking to get rid of it. They just don't want to pour money into that money pit. John Fetterman nailed it. Cut 16.
Our government should be open right now. You know, like, it's right now. Oh, but if we want to talk about Biden, this is the Biden CR. I just voted yes on that. That is a Biden CR. We voted that multiple times. You know, like, it shouldn't be controversial for us. That's why we could open it up and we could now work together to develop these tax credits for Obamacare.
Can you please, I can't emphasize this enough. This isn't President Trump's budget. The promise, rates are going up and they're all going out. And I think they're all set for the year. Now they want to make a stand and act like they're standing up for health care. This is just you're refusing to fund the government. And that's why the rating approval ratings of the Republicans went up 3 points. Chuck Schumer, the longer this goes, it's not getting better for you. It's certainly not getting better for us. Every day, America's first responders stand ready. Firefighters, law enforcement, paramedics, doctors, dispatchers, and people who put themselves on the line for public safety. But keeping them connected in moments of crisis has not been easy. That's why Congress authorized a nationwide network for public safety. Today, that promise is fulfilled through FirstNet. It's the only nationwide network built with and for first responders. So whether it's a big city, rural town, or remote tribal community, FirstNet helps ensure no call for help goes unanswered. It gives first responders priority access, never throttles their communications in the U.S., helping them to connect across agencies when it matters most. This isn't just a network. It's a lifeline, a bipartisan commitment to America's public safety, built to serve those who serve us all. FirstNet is the backbone of our nation's emergency response and will continue to be in the future. FirstNet, built with AT&T. Learn more on firstnet.com/public safety first.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Andrew Cuomo, Eric Adams, and Curtis Sliwa do not have an agenda for the future. We are going to freeze the rent for more than 2 million rent-stabilized tenants and use every resource at our disposal to build housing for everyone who needs it. We are going to eliminate the fare on every single bus line. And we are going to create universal child care at no cost to parents.
I mean, can you think of three more ridiculous things? Freeze rents, although play that out, what that's going to mean for landlords and real estate, people who own real estate and things that they might be willing to do. Number two is really free buses. We've done that in the past, and it's always been negative. And number two, and just to build on that, let's say you're free buses. Someone's got to pay the bus driver. Someone's got to pay the vehicles. Someone's got to pay the repair, the upkeep, the purchases. Who's going to do that? Well, it's going to cost hundreds of billions of dollars to do that. So don't say it's free. It's free for the people that get on the bus, but eventually we're all going to be paying. And I think we are something like $17 billion in debt in New York City, and all this guy wants to do is give things away. Free buses. Do you know he wants to make minimum wage $30, literally doubling it? Do you know what that's going to do to small business? You're going to walk into a Dunkin' Donuts and the guy serving you is going to be paid $30 an hour. Do you know the people that were getting $30 an hour, let's say the managers, they're going to get $40 and $50? You know how many Dunkin' Donuts they're going to have? About 9 in all the city, because they're not going to, it's not going to work. So people cheer this stuff. It's not going to work. And he's never done anything before. Rich Lowry joins us now, editor of National Review. And, you know, Rich, I'm focusing on his policies, but this is his anti-Semitism and the tapes that are more and more tapes emerging of him. It's just off the charts.
Yeah. And what he was trying to do the other day with that Islamophobia speech is just deflect and portray himself as a victim. Whereas if you listen to that speech, and I've listened to it several times now, the more and more you listen to it, the more sociopathic it is. This aunt, nothing happened to her. She wasn't an aunt. She was his dad's cousin. But she was just afraid to go on the subway. That's bad. You know, you prefer that she wasn't even thinking out about it after September 11th. But nothing happened to her. And then another indictment he makes against the city and America is that sometimes people have mistaken his name for Muhammad. You know, this is like microaggression level stuff. And then he says he's been living in the shadows as a Muslim man. You know, he ran for in a mock election in his middle school. He ran for vice president of student body in high school. He became a state assemblyman before age 30. He's likely to become mayor before age 35. And he's been living in the shadows. It's absurd. But this guy, on top of the ideology being wrong, is just so callow and unserious. He should be disqualified on those grounds alone, but seems likely to coast into the mayoralty.
I guess so. But there's a couple of things going on that have piqued my interest. Number one, the turnout's been off the charts for New York City. It's way ahead of pace. And they say most of the people are 50 and over, and it's the older people that would put Cuomo in, who's hardly an ideal candidate, to say the least. But the younger people, the one that got him the nomination, it's a much different group of people voting. So that might be a little different because you project who's going to show up. And so far, those projections, the people showing up have exceeded in early voting.
Yeah, so it wouldn't surprise me if it's closer than the polls make it seem. But for Cuomo to actually make up the deficit and beat him would be a miracle for the ages. I'm hoping it happens. I'm no Cuomo fan. He's just better than this guy. And look, I like Curtis Sliwa. I've known him forever. I think he's sincere. He knows a lot about the city. Really cares about the city. But you look at almost every single poll, and the difference between Cuomo and Mamdani is what is the Sliwa vote. So it doesn't mean that all the Sliwa voters would go to Cuomo, but a lot of them would, and this would be an entirely different race. So I think he should have gotten out.
So look at what emerged from 2023. Zohar Mamdani wearing a mask saying this to a group of socialists of America. Cut 24.
We have to make clear that when the boot of the NYPD is on your neck, it's been laced by the IDS.
Do you believe this? I mean, number one, what the hell are you talking about? You're going to tell me everyone in the academy is like, hey, by the way, we're taking our marching orders predominantly yeah. from the IDF. Yeah. You think, what is he even talking about? So yeah. hate, no, he's just saying, he just wants you to hate two groups. I want you to hate the Jews, and I want you to hate the cops.
Yeah.
Good night, everybody.
Classic. Yeah, just everything comes back to Israel. Everything comes back to the Jews. And it's an obsession with these people. It's not just income inequality anymore. It's hating Zionism, which ultimately goes back to hating the West itself and our own civilization. So that's what this guy reflects about 30 years worth of miseducation in the American education system. And his father was part of that, right? This ideology goes straight back to his father, who was a Columbia professor.
And he started a group in college called, Free Palestine or Americans for Palestinians. Okay, that's an interesting way to focus. You know, I guess the Glee Club was full and there was no yeah. team to try out for. I watched his soccer skills. He could have tried out for the soccer team over in Bowdoin or whatever it's called. John Stewart had him on. And I thought it was interesting because when I heard John Stewart was going to book him, I thought, man, he's going to challenge him because there's no risk to it. You're not running against a conservative. You're really running against Governor Cuomo. So you could say, hey, your policies, where do they, because John Stewart is so smart. There's no doubt about it. So listen to this. Cut 32.
There are so many different communities that are looking to you. And this, I hate to put it on you, as a bit of a Jackie Robinson moment. And I know that probably wields some weight. But man, oh, man, what an exciting opportunity.
Was there a question there?
Yeah. And then the idea that he's paying some price by being a Muslim man, when this has been one of the bragging points of his campaign. He's the first Muslim to have a real shot to be mayor of New York City, and that's what John Stewart was about. And I hate that word community. You know, it makes it sound like, every Muslim lives in the same neighborhood in America, and they all have the same values and believe the same thing and go to the same swimming pools and all the rest of it. They talk about trans people the same way, too. There are no such communities in that sense. So, yes, I agree with you. Stewart's smart. Most comedians are smart, but this was a disappointing moment.
Here's Andrew Cuomo. He seems energized now, way too late. Cut 30.
The Democratic Party is having a civil war. You don't hear it, you don't see it, but it's going on in this election. And there's two sides that are fighting. You have a far left extremist group that are called themselves socialists. Socialist sounds nice, utopia. Socialism hasn't worked anywhere. Venezuela had socialism, didn't work. Cuba was socialist, didn't work. Socialism is not going to work for New York City.
So he admits a civil war. There's a civil war in the Democratic Party. Is it similar, or would you even characterize what happened with, the Tea Party and traditional Republicans after Barack Obama won?
Yeah, I think there's something to that. Look, New York City's different. It's not the rest of the country is not exactly like New York City, but this is a pretty stark contrast. We have the young, 34-year-old socialist who's fresh, knows how to work the internet and social media, can draw huge crowds, and this tired representative of the Democratic establishment who lost to him in the primary, even though he was leading by 10 or 20 points most of the way, and is probably going to lose in the general election as well. That's a sign of who has the energy, who has the whip hand at the moment in the Democratic Party. And if I'm AOC, I'm not thinking just about challenging Chuck Schumer. I'm thinking about running for president.
Really? You wouldn't think that? You think that she's national, but has national appeal?
I do. you know, Bernie's proved it. Bernie's not going to run again. Someone's got to pick up that baton. She also has social media ability. She has the ability to draw attention. She's charismatic. So, look, do I think she'd win the nomination? Probably not. Do I think she'd win a general if she won the nomination? Probably not. But could she make a huge impact and raise her profile even more by running? I think so. And that's why I kind of think she's going to do it.
Remember, Bernie got a lot of concessions, got Joe Biden to concede a lot. And it looked like Joe Biden's presidency, especially in the beginning, was Bernie Sanders-esque.
Yep. Yeah, yeah.
So you're saying if she goes in, she becomes a power player, but she doesn't have a job.
Yeah, but there'll be some way to work that out, I would think, if you're her. And, you know, you can run looking at the next 4 years, potentially, if a J.D. Vance or a Republican wins in 28. So, but the big point, Brian, is this is her wing of the party, and it is increasingly ascendant.
It's scary, but let me push back on that. If people look at Shapiro and Bashir, they don't look at them as socialists, and they've had a lot of success in their states. Both, Pennsylvania more and more is a Republican state, and you look at certainly Kentucky is. Why wouldn't you look more to them?
Oh, I think they totally should, and I think they might. They need a Bill Clinton-like figure who's new, has a different way of doing politics, and is willing to say no to the left. Now, they got that in Bill Clinton after losing three times, three national elections. They've lost twice, you know, with Biden kind of parentheses in between. Maybe they need to lose a third time to actually do that, but maybe they'll wise up and go to someone like that this time around. I'm just, having been around this a long time, the kind of the boring, practical governor usually loses. And the exciting, fresh, new person either wins or makes a big impression. So, again, that's why I think she'll probably run, and it makes sense for her to run.
All right. I want to bring you to ICE and some controversy within ICE. The firing of a lot of these leaders, the clampdown, there seems to be one side of Homan and Lyons and another side with Stephen Miller and I think it's Bovine and Kristi Noem. Listen to Todd Lyons, Cut 39.
We don't comment on personnel issues. I'm not sure why the shakeups are such a bold thing right now. But what we're doing is we're going to make sure that we have the right people in the right place. That's what we're focused on. You know, as a leadership team, we are focused on filling the gaps where we have vacancies right now. We have individuals that are getting ready to retire after great careers. We're going to go ahead and make sure we have the right people in the right place. And that's what we're focused on.
Read between the lines with Tom Homan, Cut 37.
Secretary of Homeland Security Kristi Noem has total authority over ICE and who serves in what positions. So, you know, I think the results speak for themselves. I think we're not going to be slowed down by any, you know, any story about changes in leadership.
So what's going on here? Because I think that the president's got to get involved here. I think there's a definite divide.
Yeah, so I think you just need to be hardcore on the deportations, and I think Stephen Miller approach is right. Now, I wouldn't use ICE the way it's been used in Chicago, I think, in effect to kind of create unrest that justifies bringing in the National Guard. I don't think that's a good use of ICE, but if you're just focusing on the priorities that on the merits are the correct ones, you're going after the criminals, you're going after the people who already have removal orders, and you know you're not letting illegal immigrants gather in public places looking for illegal employment, which means yes, you do hit Home Depots. I think that's all that's correct. I'm not sure. I'm not read into every element of this power struggle apparently, but there's clearly something going on.
And I'm going to be one of the few people on the right to say this. I like the fact that they have to check in every day with this judge, right? If this judge is a reasonable human being and he's an Obama-appointed judge, he says, I want the ICE, you tell me, you check in every day. I think it's going to be like body cameras. They put body cameras on cops and they go, we're going to clamp down on cops' bad behavior. Instead, it showed how crazy
exactly.
The criminals are and how tough their job was,
yeah,
and 99%
like
of the time.
Of cases, yeah.
So when this guy shows up, he goes, these are the seven criminals that we went after today. These are the five that we had. These are the three times we got thrown rocks through at us. This is what we had to do to avoid being rammed when we crossed such and such street. I think that and I would make it all public. I would say before I go to the judge, just going to tell you what I'm going to tell the judge. This is my rundown today. And I'd go in and tell the judge after that. And I think after a while, they realize, man, what was the governor thinking fighting back against these guys?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that could be an upside. Generally, I don't like the idea of judges trying to micromanage, you know, any law enforcement agency, but that could be an upside. And certainly an upside of the body cameras, that boomerang big time on the BLM types.
Absolutely. So Rich Lowry, he's got two columns out there about Mamdani's Islamophobia canard that we just talked about and how Donald Trump has broken the progressive ratchet. Thanks so much, Rich.
Thanks, Brian. Talk soon.
All right, listen, we're going to come back and finish up with Coase. Unless you write me, BrianKilmeade.com. I'll get to some of your emails in a moment. Don't move.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade.
It's Will Kane Country. Watch it live at noon Eastern, Monday through Thursday at FoxNews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss the show. Listen and follow the podcast 5 days a week at FoxNewsPodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I'm going to tell you this as a little management lesson. When I go to a meeting, I've done the pre-reads, and you get 100% of my attention. 100%. You know, none of this nodding off, none of this reading my mail. You know, if you have an iPad in front of me, and it looks like you're reading your email or getting notifications, I tell you to close the damn thing. It's disrespectful.
So that is Jamie Dimon. Jamie Dimon of J.P. Morgan says just about things on meetings. He couldn't stand doing meetings on Zoom, and he forced everyone back to work. He's one of the biggest companies to do it and one of the first to do it. He just wants to be there in person. I don't care. If you can't come into work, unless it's a rare circumstance, you got to come back because you need the interaction, the human interaction. We found that out. And number two, he said you can't be on your phones when you're in these meetings when you do come in person, and it does drive me crazy. Now, look, in our meetings, for example, with TV and radio, when you meet, you say, oh, what about that guest? Oh, let me look. And you grab your phone and you look through your phone book to see if you have that number or let me text that person right now. I think that's different. But if you're on your phones while you're in a meeting, I mean, that's like getting up and it's really getting up and whispering in the corner in the 1970s. You go, what are you doing? Why'd you get up and go in the corner and whisper? If you get on there, by the way, they did a study. They said it's impossible to multitask. So you could do multiple things at once, but when you're doing that one task, that's all you're doing. You're not doing this, texting, and at the same time listening. It's not sinking in. If you think about it, it's 100% right. How many times are you in the room with someone, you get distracted, whether it's a television or you pick up your phone or you see a headline in a newspaper, and then you look back and go, oh, I'm sorry, what did you say? Even if you were making eye contact, your attention's elsewhere. And don't say, well, I can multitask. You can. You could do a lot of things at one time, maybe quicker, but you could do five things at one time. That'll take you 20 minutes instead of one time, 5 minutes each. That's a fact. But I think he's 100% right. I think it's the rudest thing. It's also really rude when you're with a group of like six people and well, four of them are texting. You know what that's like saying? I'd rather be with other people than you. Now, part of this is there's no etiquette book. Etiquette usually can go, for, you know, it's timeless. Like grammar, well, the same, you know, the same grammatical rules roughly from the 1950s to the 2025, even the 1850s changes little. But when it comes to manners, we slowly grew into the iPhone generation, the iPad generation, the information generation. So you can't really say, well, the salad fork goes here, the knife fork goes here, your elbow's never on the table, you pass to the right, whatever, because there's no tradition with it. Obviously, talking while somebody else is leading a meeting is a problem. But silently texting, we never really went over that. Instinctively, you think it's wrong. But you can't say, well, my parents never did that. Well, parents never had a phone. Well, that never happened in my house growing up. Well, you didn't have a phone. The new generation, this is the first generation. They're in their 20s now. They're going, yeah, I had a phone. You know, I get it now. And I think there's huge blowback on social media from people that were caught up in it, had to have the latest, whether it's Snapchat. You know, remember it was right before Facebook what was that one right before Facebook? Do you remember? Yeah, MySpace. Fox bought it, actually. So MySpace was the hottest thing. And then Facebook takes over. If you talk to someone in their 20s or in their teens, nobody has Facebook. And then Instagram is still hot. Snapchat has gone by. That was once really hot. Really hot. And obviously TikTok, they seem to have mastered the universe, 170 million followers. But I think there's blowback now on all this stuff. And there's a feeling, let's go back a little bit. Get me back to a flip phone. I never would have predicted that.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
All right, from 40th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, around the world. Brian Kilmeade show coming your way. You want to get happy? Dr. Arthur Brooks is not talking about the Partridge Family song. Isn't it the Partridge Family? Hello, get happy. Isn't that the Partridge Family? Well, Arthur Brooks, Harvard professor, Atlanta columnist, and host of Office Hours podcast, best-selling author of The Happiness Files. He teaches a course in Harvard about it, wrote a book about it. He's got a new one coming out about it. So he will be with us. He's always interesting, fascinating. And, of course, you're there. We're still following a myriad of things, including the president's overseas trip. You know, I feel bad for you guys. You're not up at 2:30 and at the door at 3 a.m. You missed the president's trip overseas, which is prime time for, you know, the time-shifted world of the Far East. Let's get to the big three.
Number three.
We have to make clear that when the boot of the NYPD is on your neck, it's been laced by the IDF.
That is the brilliant musings of a guy who most likely is going to be our next mayor. Talking about the boot of the neck of the NYPD and the IDF. Off your election 6 days away. Record turnout already in Virginia, in New Jersey, and New York. What it means for the contenders.
Number two.
I'm a military spouse, and when the 15 came around and we didn't have to worry about our check, and the first is coming and there are people that need food.
I usually have my mother over for Thanksgiving, and I don't even know how I'm going to do that. There's no way I can afford a turkey.
Well, that's all self-inflicted, too. They're not asking for a raise. They just want the money that they earn. Shutdown causing great pain for federal workers, SNAP recipients, anybody like the TSA or anybody in the air traffic control. If both are to blame, Republicans and Democrats, why are Republican approval ratings improving?
Number one.
We're signing one trade deal after another to balance our relationships on the basis of reciprocity. These agreements will be incredible victories for all of us because everyone is better off when we have stable partnerships, not plagued by chronic problems and imbalances.
He's 100% right. Trump trip in the backstretch as he's raked up investments and trade deals with the big deal tomorrow, Thursday, awaiting. The markets are optimistic. The Trump team is optimistic. Can they trust the China deal? Are they willing to sign something or are they getting close to an agreement on something? We know this. The South Korean deal is done. I love this. The headline this morning at about 5:30, I'm just trying to get the latest information on the president's trip, is they're eventually saying a lot of good feelings, a lot of warmth between the nations, but no South Korean trade deal. Then the president gets, and then the president sits around and they toast and he takes some questions and they're around the table, if you could picture this. And he said, well, what's going on? He goes, we have a trade deal with South Korea. And then South Korea says, yeah, we got a trade deal. And then the New York Times changes their headline. South Korea agrees they have a trade deal. What is it? Roughly $150 billion in investment. They're going to bring Toyota over here with a huge investment and a $200 billion investment pledge in various investments. I should say $150 billion in shipbuilding investments. So we got a ship deal with Japan. We got a ship deal with Norway. Now we have a ship deal with South Korea. It is really great. So it's pretty impressive. And also South Korea said, if you can get a meeting with Kim Jong-un, I'm fine with that. Don't worry about us. And we promise to spend more on defense. Remember, everybody asked South Korea to spend more on defense. We have to give them the THAAD missile defense system. We have to put 35,000 of our troops on the border. We're paying for that. And that bothered Trump in the first term. They go, he just doesn't understand. Now they're like, okay, we get it. We know what you're about. We know you're going to be here for 4 years. So we got to go through it. Here's Trump. Cut one.
We had a tremendous meeting today with South Korea. I think the meeting was, a lot was determined, very much determined. And we made our deal. We pretty much finalized a trade deal. And we discussed some other things having to do with national security.
And they reduce tariffs because of that. The tariffs give him leverage. He goes in there, puts the tariff at a certain level, and then they go back and forth to get the best deal possible, and they got the best deal possible. What is confusing to me is that they say Vietnam is not done yet. And I went, wait a second. I thought that was one of the first deals that were done, is Vietnam. But I guess they got to work out the details. Jamison Greer will probably handle that. Now, what's about China tomorrow? What do you think you can expect? I hear really good things about China. I really good things about things we could agree on. Here is Donald Trump, cut four.
They're all investing in the U.S. We're the hottest we've ever been. We're the hottest country in the world. And they're all investing, so I'll be doing that. And then tomorrow morning is the one that most people find the most interesting. And I think we're going to have a great meeting with President Xi of China. And a lot of problems are going to be solved.
Yeah, well, we hope so. A lot of problems. Number one, they got to buy our agricultural products, especially soybeans. Meanwhile, they got to agree not to limit rare earth for at least a year. I think that's done. They said for a reduction in tariffs, we need you to crack down on the precursors to fentanyl that's going to Mexico and not getting out. You're not getting addicts from fentanyl. You know what you're getting? Death. So, and what happens? One and done. In a lot of cases, one and done. So the president is blowing up ships that he sees. They're heading the drug routes over to the Caribbean and up the coast, blowing them up with drones. I believe they're drones, and putting unbelievable amount of pressure on Venezuela. The president's doing a bunch of stuff at the same time. Now, you might point out to, wow, why is the president away during a shutdown? Number one, Democrats caused the shutdown. They're the ones who didn't want to have a continuing resolution to continue to negotiate on all aspects of the budget, number one. Number two is, this is an important trip. This isn't a ceremonial thing. They're not going to the Olympics. They're not going to the World Cup. They're going to important conferences to establish relationships with people that we might have to fight with against China, that we need on the same side when it comes to trade, that we have to work out trade deals for both sides to stabilize our economy. President went in last April and said these are the new deals. Little by little, he's getting better deals with just about everyone. He also announced a deal with Cambodia as well as Malaysia. And we know Indonesia, by the way, I don't know if we have a deal yet, but they've been kind enough to say, we'll give you troops for Gaza. So I wish we can get Egypt and Jordan to do the same thing. I don't know what the holdup is. Here's the big story for China, though, is Taiwan. What's going to be brought up? Well, they're asking President Trump to put something in his language to say that basically Taiwan should never be an independent state. They consider it a breakaway province. Remember, right after the World War II, Chiang Kai-shek, a Democrat, using that term loosely, was forced from power by Mao. And then most of his group went over to Taiwan to establish themselves. Taiwan is a thriving island full of freedom and opportunity. And I think that China hates it. They have a great quality of life. They have this thing called capitalism. They are unbelievably productive. Even though China tries to isolate them, it's the style of government that China fears that China would ever become. And if they ever did that, even though they might be more formidable of a competitor, they would actually be our partner, which would help the world be a better place. So they essentially want the president to say that China is not an independent country. I think he's going to stay totally away from that, and I wouldn't blame him. Here's Josh Holmes of Ruthless, Cut 11.
It's a long-held goal of the Chinese to weaken that relationship, but I think you heard Secretary of State Marco Rubio speak very clearly to the fact that that's not going to happen. But furthermore, I think if there's any lesson of the Trump administration, it's that he doesn't negotiate from a position of weakness, and that certainly would be one. What he's talking about is trying to lay a predicate for a negotiation that deals with things like fentanyl and fentanyl imports, things that he's like a dog on a bone on that issue. Seen it in a bunch of different countries. Well, China is the most significant purveyor of this, and that is what he's going to be focused on. But when it comes to Taiwan, I think he understands the strategic import of all of that, and he's certainly not going to negotiate from a position of weakness.
Yeah, so I want to probably get to the shutdown, too. So just so you know, to recap, and I'm not really skewing it, I'll just tell you exactly what happened. They said if we sign a continuing resolution, because there's only three appropriation bills done in the Senate, they're all done in the House. The House votes to have a clean CR. Why would the House worry about that? Because ideally, after the House passes their budget, then they got to have a conference with the Senate, and then they find out what they're actually going to be spending for the year in the ideal world. House does their job. They just sent them home because it was up to the Senate to do their job, and the Senate didn't. So I think they've refused to provide, get over the 60-vote threshold, I think 17 times. So the question is it true? Is it true what Chuck Schumer says? The longer this goes on, the more we win. I don't think so. I think that the number one union, workers union, has already called on the Democrats to sign a continuing resolution so we can get back to work. If you don't believe me, listen to the pollster on CNN, Howard Enten, cut 27. 22.
Take a look here, the shift in net popularity versus pre-shutdown. Among the when we're looking at the Republican Party overall, that brand actually up 2 points. That's within the margin of error, but clearly it hasn't dropped. Come over to this side of the screen. Look at the net approval ratings for Republicans in Congress. It's actually up 5 points since pre-shutdown. So what we're seeing here is the Republican brand in Congress has actually improved somewhat compared to where we were pre-shutdown.
Do you believe this? This is CNN, and you got to hear, you got to only imagine what the anchor was doing as they try to show that it's Republicans' fault for not negotiating. Why would they negotiate? And my analogy, I think, is a good one. It's like someone breaking into your house and saying, if you want us out, you got to negotiate. What are you talking about? What are you doing in my house? Well, just negotiate. No, I'm not going to negotiate. You broke into my house. Well, get out. Well, we're going to go to one room. We'll keep all our guys in one room if you just negotiate. We'll negotiate. No, I want you out of the house. And once you're out of the house, if you have an issue with the neighborhood, I'll talk to you. But if I negotiate with you now, this is going to be happening every week. Every time that you see we're in the majority, and if the same thing happens after the midterms, every time we have a budget, you're not going to sign on to anything. You're not going to do appropriations. You're just going to end up holding us hostage. And if you don't believe my words, listen to Chris Coons, the senator from Delaware, says exactly why they're doing this. Cut 17.
Republicans control the House, the Senate, and the White House. Frankly, this is our only moment of leverage. And although a very unpleasant tool to use, it's gotten us focused on what we have to do to change direction on health care.
Whoa, leverage. So if you're not getting your SNAP benefits, you have nothing to eat today, you can't pay your bills, your utility costs through the roof, you don't know what you're going to do, you live paycheck to paycheck, and the paycheck has nothing in it. What are you going to do? Well, don't worry. Democrats need leverage. Does that make you happy? All right, at the bottom of the hour, we're going to have Dr. Arthur Brooks. When we come back, we're also going to continue to talk about what's happening, what's also happening with these off-year elections. It's 6 days away. You're not going to believe the newest tape to emerge about Mr. Mamdani. More anti-Semitic than you can imagine. Watch.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Comments seem to come out every single day with different videos and clips from Mamdani. The latest one that was back in 2023, he tied the IDF to the NYPD. What do you think about that?
He said that when the NYPD puts its boot on your throat, it was laced by the IDF, the Israeli Defense Forces. That is just a really repulsive, divisive thing to say. And I don't even know how he's trying to equate those two things.
Either do I. I mean, it's such a horrific thing that he said. And Cuomo brings it up, and he was verbatim. He was right on the money. That's exactly what he said. But what are you talking about? So the NYPD, he already says he's a racist and anti-queer. Okay. After about a year, he apologized when Martha McCallum said, why don't you apologize? He goes, okay, I apologize. Before that, he was saying, I see cops on the street and I apologize him quietly. But that was okay. And then this emerges from 2023 when he says this. How does the IDF and NYPD get along? Do you really think they might do some elite training together with special units? But do you really think they take their orders from Israel? Does that even make any sense to you? Here's more from Cuomo as he tries to close the gap, which is about 10 points with Mamdani. And 5 days ago, cut 26.
What do you think the NYPD thinks about those comments?
Well, to be called racist, wicked, corrupt, a threat to public safety, anti-queer, by a person who wants to be mayor? The mayor is supposed to have the back of the NYPD, right? They need to know that they have the confidence of the mayor. How could these police officers ever look at him, let alone work with him?
I don't know if you guys know this around the country, but in New York, when there sadly is a police officer down and he passes away, all the cops will line up outside the hospital. And when the mayor shows up, when de Blasio shows up, he's such an enemy of the NYPD, cut literally $1 billion out of the budget. He made them take so much abuse during the George Floyd riots, they literally turned their back on him. I guarantee you they'll be doing that to Mondami. You know, I brought up, we had some first responders in the studio on Tuesday on Fox and Friends. And I was talking to them, and they said that, you know, we all, you know, there was a lot of people who are going to want to quit, but we can't. You know, you're in the middle of a career, you're 12 years in, you don't like the mayor, and you quit. Well, what am I doing after? You know, a lot of them just went right from high school in there. What am I doing? So you got to suck it up, and you got to deal with it, but you can show your displeasure with things like that. And believe me, they're not going to like this guy. But the one thing that shows you how insincere Governor Cuomo is, and he does this thing exclusively for Fox. He decides that he is going to promise to open up a charter school that's Arabic speaking if he wins. Further dividing people into enclaves and making people not learn English, having a charter school where they just speak Arabic, how will that help them meld into the city and become part of our society? When you go to high school, you're mostly the formative years when you make your lifelong friends in many cases, and then you're speaking Arabic. But he thinks, I got to cut into the Muslim community. I know what I'll do. I'll promise him anything. And that's Governor Cuomo. I like him better than Mondami, but that's what you're dealing with. He thought that was a great move. I think it's a terrible move. But the turnout is very positive in New York. A record number of early voters are weighing in the race, but the candidates are working to persuade undecided voters with 1 week to go. Still, they think there's a lot of undecideds. Nearly a quarter million New Yorkers have already voted, with the biggest turnout being in Brooklyn and Manhattan, being driven by middle age and older voters. That is great news for Cuomo. Cuomo believes the momentum is with him in ways he wasn't during the Democratic primary. Curtis Sliwa is being relentless, indefatigable, working around the clock. Cuomo's goal is to tug over the support of moderate voters and as many Republicans as possible. That's his goal. And Sliwa is not stepping aside. People have asked him to. The guy that did step aside is Eric Adams. He was campaigning with Cuomo, which must be awkward. Cut 31.
One more thing I want to point out that Zoran has been stating the last couple of days is that our comments are Islamophobic. He just said that over and over again, that he was hoping to bring the city together. You don't bring the city together by supporting globalized intifada. You don't bring the city together by talking about what's happening in Gaza, but not mentioning the 18,000 churches that were burned in Nigeria and 7,000 Nigerian Christians that died. Bringing the city together is what I did for almost 15 years, speaking to the pains of every community. Instead, he has been divisive and not bringing people together.
He's right. But Eric Adams can't help but run. I'm sure he's in disbelief that he's not running. But going with Cuomo is a tough thing. You know, Curtis Lee was said, no, I'm doing it myself. And Eric Adams says, no, I'm not getting anywhere. So I don't want Mondami to win. Either do I. Dr. Arthur Brooks is next. He always thinks of the positive things. He's going to help you change your life, especially how you wake up and when you have your coffee.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, we are back. One of our all-time great guests, Dr. Arthur Brooks, is here. Harvard professor, Atlanta columnist, host of Office Hours podcast, best-selling author of The Happiness Files, Insights on Work and Life. And he has a new book coming out, too, which I can't wait to find out more about. And also, he's got a new article, How to Heal Our Country, which is a big thing to say, and also how to make your individual life better, healthier, right, Arthur?
Yeah, for sure. I teach happiness at Harvard, and that's wraparound happiness, man. How do you do it for a country? How do you do it for yourself? How do you do it for family? And it's all based on science. So this is not just self-improvement. This is the neuroscience and behavioral science of how to be a happier person.
And are you still learning this?
Oh, yeah, for sure. It's a goal for the rest of my life. You know, I got my PhD about 30 years ago, and I've been studying this stuff. But over the past 7 years, I've dedicated myself completely to human happiness. and what it actually means. You know, the science of how this actually works, how you can change your habits and protocols and then teach it to other people so your family and the, you know, people around you can get happier too.
And did you teach this past semester?
Yeah, I mean, I teach in the spring. So okay. I teach in the spring up at Harvard. And, you know, I'll have 180 students in my class starting in January. I'll have 400 on the waiting list. Mm-hmm. There'll probably be an illegal Zoom link they think I don't know about.
Right. And just because it must feel good to have that type of.
It's fantastic. It's the best. You know, it's you know, we get one pass through this mortal coil, man. And you can make life better for people. Mm-hmm. You can make life worse for people. And I dedicated myself. Look, I'm a Christian. And I said, I'm going to dedicate my Christian faith to my secular job. And I want to make people happier. I want to help people understand how to have more love in their life is what it comes down to. And I'm a scientist. So I got to do the science behind it. It's great.
What's the relationship between success and happiness?
So that's an interesting thing that most people don't get right. And here's the key thing to remember. Mother Nature doesn't care if you're happy. Mother Nature wants you to survive and pass on your genes. Happiness is your job is what it comes to. Everybody listening to us, happiness is something that you have to choose and do things that actually stand up to your natural impulses. So you want to have more money, more power, more pleasure, more admiration of other people. And that'll give you more, you know, all of the stuff that the world promises, but it won't bring you more happiness is the problem. So what I tell my students is you think success will bring you happiness. Going for happiness directly, which comes from faith, family, friendship, and work that serves other people, then you'll be successful enough.
So what role does, in more practical purposes, let's say you have this, you have great friends, you have a great family, but you have the stress every day, which a lot of people listening to us right now.
Yeah.
Was it the number 70% of all Americans live paycheck to paycheck?
Yeah.
They worry one thing goes wrong. They don't worry about the safety net. So Social Security won't be enough.
Yeah.
That's real worry. How do you figure happiness? How do you work happiness into that?
Yeah. So the problem with that is that these real world tensions and anxieties, they actually don't hurt your happiness, but they raise your unhappiness. And happiness and unhappiness are not opposites. So you can be a very happy person and also have a lot of sources of unhappiness in your life. The key thing to keep in mind is that you do the best you can to lower these sources of unhappiness. You find the best job that you can.
Right.
You have a good relationship with other people who can help you, et cetera, et cetera. But then focus on the real sources of your happiness, which all come from love. Love that you have with God. Love that you have with your family and friends. Love toward the whole world to the way that you're trying to serve is the way that that works.
So you think about, you know, obviously a balance through that.
Yeah, for sure. You can't change the whole world, but you can change yourself. Focus on the things that you can actually change to become a happier person.
And is it the voice? What do you do with the voice in your head that wants more?
I know. Well, that's Mother Nature once again. And that's one of the reasons that every religion and every philosophy has always said, stand up to your nature, man. I mean, there's kind of two parts about being a person. Your dog, you have a dog, Brian?
Two.
You have two dogs. Your dogs really only have animal impulses. They're awesome. They act like humans, but they really have an animal impulse. We have this part of our brain called the prefrontal cortex right behind our foreheads. It's huge. It's a supercomputer that gives us more than animal impulses. We also have moral aspirations. We can make decisions in spite of our animal impulses. And that's what we're trying to do all day long. If you live with your animal impulses, you'll just get drunk every night. You'll sleep in every morning. You won't show up for work. You'll cheat on your spouse. And that's because your animal impulses say, that'll feel good. Don't do it. You want to live up to your moral aspirations, and then you get happier by making conscious decisions.
And it becomes a habit, right?
Totally.
You start showing that discipline, it becomes a habit, and that becomes a reinforcement.
Animal habits reinforce themselves. Moral habits reinforce themselves as well.
Is there a number that you should go through in order for it to be a habit? People talk about how many days you should do something, whether it's a diet or exercise.
Yeah, it depends on what you're actually doing. So you find, for example, exercise, generally speaking, takes about 6 weeks, four times a week, doing exactly the same thing. So I put people – I do a lot of work on biology too. I mean, I do a lot of work on wraparound wellness, health and wellness. And so, and I'm a real gym rat and fitness guy. And so what I tell people is if they want to start working out.
For people not watching the stream, you're in unbelievable shape.
I'm at 61, I feel better than when I was 31. That's for sure.
Right.
And because I've got my diet and exercise on point. Yeah, totally. I work out 7 days a week, an hour a day, but nobody's going to do that from nothing. The way to do that is to do a workout, usually a zone two cardio workout. That means like a little elliptical thing. You're going for a really brisk walk 4 days a week for 6 weeks and then start getting fancier. But four times a week for 6 weeks and then it becomes a habit and then we'll talk about how to make it fancier.
Right. One builds on the other. How do you feel about the shortcuts?
Which ones?
Like maybe Zeptide or whatever.
Yeah, Zepbound, Mounjaro, the GLP-1 drugs. Those things are a miracle, actually. And what they do is they actually among other things. I mean, they're thought of as obesity drugs, but they're changing behavior as well. They're changing other kinds of bad habits. People take them and find they don't want to smoke anymore. People take them and they don't want to eat junk food so much anymore
or
drink alcohol anymore. So it's kind of an amazing thing, because what it does is it interrupts the reward cycle in your brain, where you get these big, big dopamine-based rewards for these particular behaviors. And so they're a great thing, and they can be a good adjunct to how you're trying to improve your life.
So when you see, Serena Williams, and when you see Charles Barkley, say, yeah, that's what I'm on.
Yeah.
I mean, that's changed even since the last time I talked to you.
Yeah.
People were taking it, and they said, well, I'm not going to tell anyone. Now it's out there.
Yeah.
Here's why I think it would be good. So you think to yourself, no matter what I do, I can't lose weight.
You know?
When some people do work out, and they don't get the reward they want.
Well, you can't out-exercise a bad diet. Can't be done. Can't be done. You got to change the behavior of the input of what you're putting in your mouth, and not just actually how you're spending exercise. Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, because it'll lessen the weight, but you're not going to get the tone.
Yeah.
You're not going to get the muscle.
Mm.
But it's a jump start to say, wow, look what's possible.
Yeah, that's
right.
You know,
it gets you out of a rut and ready to go.
Yeah, so, totally. I mean, I got nothing against those particular things. Now, the whole idea that a lot of people who don't really need to lose weight are doing it for pure vanity reasons, that's another psychological problem. Vanity will mess you up. Vanity will ruin the quality of your life. That's just the truth. If you're looking in the mirror thinking all day long, what do people think of me? What do people think about how I look? That per se is a problem, actually. So if that's the reason you're using it.
Why are you working out?
I'm working out because it's for three basic reasons. I get up in the morning at 4:30. 4:45 to 5:45, I work out every day for three reasons. Number one is mood management.
By the way, can I also tell you that it's hard to roll out of bed and work out?
Yeah, that's a habit.
That's hard, right?
It's a habit. And it's a habit without doing it without coffee, because I drink my coffee much later. And you and I have talked about this before. So number one is I'm trying to manage negative mood. The best way to manage negative mood is picking up heavy things and running around. And if you have a naturally negative mood, which half the population is above average in negative mood, they just are, and it tends to be most acute first thing in the morning, don't drink alcohol, don't take drugs, don't be a workaholic, don't blunt your feelings by distracting yourself with behavior and substances. There are two things to do. Pray more, worship more. Religion is incredibly good for negative mood. And number two is work out, is go to the gym, pick up heavy things, go work, run around. And that's what I do first thing in the morning. That's why.
Arthur Brooks is with us. And he's – what's the name of your new book coming out?
Oh, the new book is coming out. It's coming out March 31st of 2026, The Meaning of Your Life, Finding Purpose in an Age of Emptiness.
Wow. Where do you start with that book?
Oh, man, it's been five years in the making.
Wow.
It's the hardest book I ever wrote.
Topic sentence is tough enough.
I know.
So a couple of things. This is what I find interesting, is that when you go to countries, developing countries, their goal, especially early man, their goal is we got to eat every day, we got to find shelter every day. You know, early, like you study early Americans when they start moving west.
Right.
Well, we got to find a place to live. We got to find out there's going to be a road. We got to find out what we're going to eat.
Right.
You don't have necessary time to go, what makes me happy?
Right.
You have goals called survival.
Right.
And then hopefully success and wealth.
Yeah.
And then you read about these stories and these accounts, but there's something healthy about that.
Yeah.
And it just wipes out a lot of the outside sources. Yeah, I'm not really worried about my biceps.
Yeah.
I'm not worried about my chest development.
Yes.
Man, I got to make sure that this move I'm making with my family works out, and I'm not going to be attacked by the American Indians and things to that nature. And that's what you see in a lot of developing countries today. Survival is the key.
Right.
That's a different situation than what Americans deal with, because survival in most cases is not an issue.
Right. No, that's right. Now, the problem is that when you have avoidable sources of misery, like caloric deficits, or your kids don't get vaccines, or you can't send your kids to school, that actually does raise
school,
a lot of unhappiness. That really does raise a lot of unhappiness. That's true. The problem is that when you actually are not thinking in the way that your brain was intended to think, which is about doing your work every day and your basic relationships and focusing on the people around you. And, you know, I'll tell you, my great grandfather was a farmer, and there's one thing he never once said. I mean, he had a hard life, and his job was really boring. And you know, he didn't know if there's going to be food on the table, but he never once went home and said to my great grandmother, "Honey, I had a panic attack behind the mule today." No, because
this is my point exactly.
Because that didn't exist is the whole point. And part of the reason was, like, his life could have been better and mine is, but he was using his brain the way that nature intended for him to use his brain, which was focusing on the here and now, doing his work, taking care of his family, and not looking at the stupid screen in his pocket.
So he wouldn't need your course.
No.
He would not need your course, would he?
There's certain things that actually could have been better, you know, that he could have learned more of, but he could have taught a lot of things to me too, because his brain was working the way evolution intended it.
So, I mean, we get to a certain point. Do you believe in, with these kids and the therapists there in school, that we're working almost, we're giving kids too much therapy, too much convenience, or worried about too much their thought, worries, I mean, bullying obviously is a problem, especially if it's health. But a lot of the friction the kids go through with parents that weren't necessarily there, or school teachers and nurses and psychologists that weren't even employed or perhaps at your school, those things that you learn to work through high school and through grammar school, a lot of kids are getting the soft landing with therapy and there's something wrong and we can work with you. Are you under the school of thought that there's a lot of negativity to that, even though the objective is correct?
There's in the current day, the way that we understand adolescents' mental health, a lot of it's misguided. There's this idea that if you're sad and anxious, there's something wrong with you and you got to cure it. That's incorrect.
Call the parents.
I tell my students, look, you study at Harvard. If you're not sad and anxious, you need therapy. It's a hard thing that you're doing, and good for you. You're making sacrifices and you're struggling, and that's life on earth, man. And you don't need, you should never try to eliminate your suffering. Your suffering is sacred. You learn from your suffering. You learn how to manage your suffering by suffering. Now, it can be dysregulated. You can be depressed and anxious, and there can be a medical problem, to be sure. But the idea of eliminating suffering, that's a misguided approach, and it's making things worse. You could solve a multitude of problems with some relatively simple protocols for a lot of young people. Take away the phone and go run around outside. That's number one. For a lot of young people, that just solves a multitude of problems.
And to back up your thoughts, Arthur, is these people that, and most schools are doing this now, making the kids put their phones away, whether it's in a box or leave it at home. Almost all the kids are embracing this now.
They love
as
it.
As well as the teachers.
They love it. But of course, it's hard to do. And 27 states are still not doing it. There's not one classroom in America from kindergarten through PhD that should have one phone in it. And that just takes fortitude and courage on the part of politicians, and it's going to raise mental health dramatically.
This is a new problem.
Yeah.
And it was like one of those things where you put a frog in the water and you slowly make the water hotter. You didn't even know what the water was a problem. So when we first invented this, I never remember as the BlackBerry went to the iPhone, people weren't saying this could be a problem.
Right.
I always thought about the possibility.
Yeah. I mean, this is what technology
does. Did you recognize it as a problem?
Well, yeah, because I'm a behavioral scientist and I was looking at this. And, you know, I pal around with guys like Jonathan Haidt down at New York University who wrote The Anxious Generation, a great book.
There's no small talk
about how this works.
Right?
Well, you know, it's like it's what we do. It's shop talk. It's like when you're talking with one of your buddies here at Fox, you know, you're talking about the business. And it's true. We saw actually this thing coming a long time. And we've been collecting data and doing studies on this as well. We can solve this problem with proper discipline, proper protocols, good schooling, and good parenting. And I'm sure that we will solve this problem. Just a lot of damage along the way.
One thing that's working against me and my texting is spell check.
Yeah.
Because most of the time it doesn't know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
And I got to check it more. But that's pretty much my problem. It's the people I text that are unhappy about it. Arthur Brooks is here. He's got some great things. Also, when we come back, when you should have your coffee and why and how you should start your day if you want to be happy. Don't move.
Illuminating. Intriguing. Inculcating.
I know some of these words.
It's Brian Kilmeade. Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
He wanted the best for them. That's where I disagreed with Charlie. I hate my opponent. And I don't want the best for them. I'm sorry. I am sorry, Erica. But now Erica can talk to me and the whole group, and maybe they can convince me that that's not right, but I can't stand my opponent. Charlie's angry. Look at that. He's angry at me now.
So I think that's perfect for our next segment. Arthur Brooks, we have a few more minutes with the Harvard professor, best-selling author. His podcast is also very successful. It's called he's a host of Office Hours. You can get it on Spotify. Dr. Brooks, the name of your column is basically Forgive Your Enemies. That's what I thought. That would be a perfect
Love your enemies.
Don't
forgive them. Love them.
All right. Yeah. So I think Trump was having fun with that.
Of course.
But you were shaking your head.
You know, he's being provocative. And I got it. I was the National Prayer Breakfast keynote speaker in 2020. And I was on the dais with Donald Trump. And, you know, that was the morning that he had been acquitted from his second or third or 40th, whatever it was, you know, the time he was impeached by the Democrats. And he comes out and you know, I was given a speech called Love Your Enemies and Pray for Those Who Persecute. It's a national prayer breakfast. And Donald Trump, he's such a great performer, I have to say. And he gets up and he says, I love a good speech by Arthur Brooks. But But I got to say, I disagree. You know, and it's like the gall to get up and disagree with Jesus at the national prayer breakfast.
Right. But, you know, it's half his tongue in cheek.
Of course. He's a performer. He's a performer, absolutely.
But he's, you know, it's very hard. By loving your enemies.
Yeah.
And Erica Kirk did do by saying, I forgive the assassin of my husband.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an incredible example for your premise.
Yeah. Well, here the important thing to keep in mind is that Jesus didn't say to like your enemies. Martin Luther King gave a sermon on this part of the gospel. This is Matthew 5:44, the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus says, you've heard that you should love your friends and hate your enemies. Today, I give you a new teaching. Love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. Hardest teaching ever. But that means you have to make the decision notwithstanding your feelings. And that's really what we're talking about. People
what do you
today,
get out of that by doing that? How does that help you?
That gives you control. Because when you're not hating and somebody else is, you have control. You have cognitive control. You have literally more power. That doesn't mean you have to like somebody, invite them over for dinner. It doesn't mean you have to be best friends with them and have tender feelings toward them. It has nothing to do with your feelings at all. It's the decision that you make actually to will the good of another person. And sometimes the good of the other person requires that you do a really, really hard thing that they don't like, but never do it out of hate, because if you do, you're weak. I mean, you're not actually going to be as effective as you could be.
And do you practice that?
I try. Yeah. I try. I pray about that every day. It's very important to me to actually practice that. I don't like everybody, but I'm commanded by my master to love everybody.
On a lighter note,
yeah.
What have you found out? You were talking about your schedule before, how you work out right away,
right?
And you get going, but you wait a while to have coffee because also health is very much a part of your school.
Absolutely, and you know one of the things that we understand about coffee actually blocks a neurotransmitter called adenosine. Coffee doesn't pep you up. Coffee blocks you from actually feeling lethargic. That's how it works. Adenosine is one of these circulating neurochemicals that makes you feel groggy, makes you go to sleep at night. And there's a lot of it in your brain when you first wake up, and that's why you feel groggy. It'll get blocked by caffeine. Don't do that. Let it clear naturally. That way you won't have a crash, and you can use it to focus on your work instead.
In 20 seconds left, what should we plug for Arthur Brooks? What book should we get of yours?
Oh, the last one is The Happiness Files, Insights on Life and Work.
I get through it. I downloaded it, even though you gave me a complimentary copy. So you got money there.
Thanks, man. Thank you.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
So glad you're there. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. I happen to be located in New York City. It's about to be controlled, I think, by a borderline communist. Some of the statements that have emerged, some of the things that he has said is so concerning. You would think this guy would be a distant memory, one of those also-ran candidates that stood out because it made you shake your head. But he's leading and has never trailed. Martha McCallum at the bottom of the hour, Karl Rove next. And just a quick reminder, Patriot Awards, go scoop up your tickets. It's Thursday, November 6th, streaming on Fox Nation. Also, coming up November 1st, that's this Saturday, 5 p.m. It's an odd time, but a great theater, Pottstown, Pennsylvania, History, Liberty, and Laughs. I want everyone out there, and that means you. So before we go any further, let's get to the big three.
Number three.
We have to make clear that when the boot of the NYPD is on your neck, it's been laced by the IDF.
Believe that? That's not a voiceover or AI. That is Zohran Mamdani in 2023. Off your election 6 days away and a record turnout already in Virginia, in New Jersey, and New York City. What it means for the final tallies.
Number two.
I'm a military spouse, and when the 15 came around and we didn't have to worry about our check, and the first is coming and there are people that need food.
I usually have my mother over for Thanksgiving, and I don't even know how I'm going to do that. There's no way I can afford a turkey.
Shutdown stories causing great pain for federal workers, SNAP recipients, military, and more. If both are to blame, why are Republicans' approval ratings improving?
Number one.
We're signing one trade deal after another to balance our relationships on the basis of reciprocity. These agreements will be incredible victories for all of us because everyone is better off when we have stable partnerships, not plagued by chronic problems and imbalances.
That is President Trump signing one deal after another overseas. Trump trip is in the backstretch as he's racked up investments and trade deals with big deals set for tomorrow. We think with China, all seems to be set up for a big announcement. The market certainly thinks so. And I want to get Karl Rove's opinion on that. Karl, so far we had a stop in Malaysia, stop in Japan. Now they're in South Korea. And that's where he's going to meet with President Xi of China. So far, this trip looks like a big success, especially knowing 2 hours ago they announced the trade deal with South Korea has been done.
Yeah. And remember, he's going to start his Friday in Korea, which will be the middle of the night, Thursday night here, and will be back at the White House at 3 o'clock on Friday afternoon in order to celebrate Halloween with a mob of children on the South Lawn of the White House. Pretty amazing.
I know. And evidently, overseas, he's not sleeping. He's just so energized by what he's seeing. I think it's been impressive. I think the Middle East doing business deals and establishing relationships, it really matters. It matters a lot in business. And Carl, bring me inside it. How much does it matter when you know the other leader?
Well, it matters a lot. I mean, and it also, you know, you can see people evolve. That's one of the amazing things, is that you can see how a relationship is developing with someone because of events. And most of the time that can be for the good, a president being involved. I'm sure it looks like he's off to a great start with the new prime minister of Japan, a very important relationship for us. But also, you know, sometimes they go south, and we saw that recently with Putin, who, you know, frankly played the president in Alaska, and the president didn't like it. And he said things that obviously the president thinks he has not lived up to, and the president's going to deal with that accordingly. And so, yes, it matters a lot. You want to have a relationship where these two people get to know each other, because it gives a higher level of trust in the conversations that they then have. Bush, for example, had a great relationship with the Japanese Prime Minister Koizumi, who's one of the two modern Japanese prime ministers who, besides Abe, who is a close friend of Koizumi, the longest serving prime ministers of the modern Japan. And they got to know each other, which was really odd because Koizumi's father was a Japanese soldier in World War II who was shooting at people like George W. Bush's father, who was a Navy pilot in the Pacific. And yet their two sons became very close comrades and companions and partners in helping defend the security interests of both countries.
So a couple of things. With Japan, they're going to have $10 billion worth of investments in auto plants here, $400 billion of potential investments in energy, and they're also agreed to $550 billion worth of strategic investment here. So the president knows, I mean, I don't ever remember a president thinking so much about business. He also is on the precipice of cutting a deal with Colombia. He did a deal with Colombia and Malaysia and is close to doing one with Thailand and Vietnam. So that April meeting when everything was kind of blown up and we're trying to rebalance trade, little by little, he's pulling them in. I also think it's kind of interesting with China. They let it out that they're very optimistic something's going to get done tomorrow on fentanyl, something's going to get done tomorrow on soybeans, and something's going to get done on rare earth. What are you hearing?
Well, first of all, let me say one thing. The $550 billion includes the other things that you mentioned, $400 billion of investment in certain things and $10 billion for, new auto plants, the Japanese auto plants in the U.S., et cetera. So $550 billion. And that's a pretty big chunk coming from Japan. I mean, that's a significant part of their economy. Look, it is clear that people want to do business with the U.S. And my sense is that the Chinese, doing something about the precursor chemicals for fentanyl is something they could have done a long time ago. It's a sign that the president has pressured them enough that they feel they need to give up that card now. And look, they're making a mistake on rare earths, because what is happening is they were sort of the supplier to the world of this vital element that goes into electric cars and it goes into all kinds of things, that chips, you name it. Now the rest of the world says we can't trust them to be a reliable supplier, so we're going to develop our own. We call them rare earths, but they're actually pretty common. It's just that we don't mine them much outside of China. Now we're going to do it in Australia. We're going to do it in the U.S. We're going to do it in other. Ukraine has a lot of rare earths. So, the Chinese have hurt themselves over the long run. The interesting thing to me is food. China does not have enough agriculture to sustain its own people, so it's a net importer of food. We are a net exporter of food. We grow far more than we can ever consume, and this is going to be helpful to soybean farmers in in the Great Plains who have been cut off from the Chinese market by the Chinese trying to make up their food needs with purchases from Brazil and Argentina and elsewhere. But it looks like they can't get them enough of them at the price they need. We're already the largest supplier of pork, for example, to China, because nobody else can match our prices and our volume.
So let's jog over to the shutdown. Senator Chris Coons on C-SPAN, let it be known exactly what they're doing. Cut 17.
Republicans control the House, the Senate, and the White House. Frankly, this is our only moment of leverage. And although a very unpleasant tool to use, it's gotten us focused on what we have to do to change direction on health care.
So if you're in the military, if you're an air traffic controller, TSA worker, any federal employee, just know that you're being used as leverage.
Yeah. Oh, I think about the kids who are going to not have school lunch programs or the families that depend upon SNAP funds to put something on the table. Just, you know, if you're hungry, just remember the Democrats are you're giving the Democrats a tool to use, and they're using it. Or actually, they're using you as a tool, or maybe they are just tools, period.
So here is here we are. We're weeks into this now. The president's overseas, and we know that there's really no off-ramp. If I gave Karl Rove the keys to design an off-ramp that would end this thing, even though you're a conservative, how does it end, knowing that there's got to be the Democrats looking for at least a space-saving measure?
Yeah, well, there's got to be a level of confidence and trust among the members in the Senate and the House, Democrat and Republican, that they agree that they're going to have conversations and that there are solutions possible, that it's going to have to be give and take on both sides. Democrats want to get the continuation of the Affordable Care Act, the Obamacare subsidies. Republicans might be willing to do that, provided you take into account the enormous fraud. How can you deal with that? And also so that, you know, the very wealthy are not getting the same kind of benefit that somebody who middle class or working class it gets. There are ways to arrive at it, but ultimately it's going to come down to the trust that you find between individual players in the House and Senate. You know, the chairman of the Senate Appropriations Committee, Susan Collins, has got to play a big role in this. The chairman of the House Appropriations Committee, Tom Cole of Oklahoma, has got to play a role in this. And the good news is there are people; those are the kind of people that Democrats say, you know what, if Tom gives me his word or Susan gives me his word, I can count on it. But it requires the Democrats to stop playing games. Look, I hate this. When Republicans are in the minority and Democrats are in power, the Republicans make a stink about a clean resolution and don't support it. And when Republicans are in power and the Democrats are in the minority and the Republicans propose a clean continuing resolution, the Democrats play games. And in both instances, it's wrong. We have the biggest enterprise on the face of the planet called the U.S. government. And for us to be treating the budget and the fiscal responsibility of that institution as casually as we're doing with this is ridiculous. So the Democrats, there's a reason why you pointed it out. Republicans are their approval ratings are rising because the Democrats are being so open. We want to subject the country to such a
so
volume
crazy.
of hurt that you'll side with us against the people who are trying to do the responsible thing. A continuing resolution ought to be clean. You shouldn't be playing games on it.
Here's how it ended.
I want you to hear
CNN, because I know you don't watch. So I taped this portion. This is their pollster. Cut 22.
Take a look here. The shift in net popularity versus pre-shutdown. Among the when we're looking at the Republican Party overall, that brand actually up 2 points. That's within the margin of error, but clearly it hasn't dropped. Come over to this side of the screen. Look at the net approval ratings for Republicans in Congress. It's actually up 5 points since pre-shutdown. So what we're seeing here is the Republican brand in Congress has actually improved somewhat compared to where we were pre-shutdown.
I'm surprised they didn't cut his mic, but those are numbers. You live in the numbers world, Carl.
Yeah. Is he still employed, incidentally?
Look,
this is, I mean, go to almost any poll, and he's right. Take a look at before the shutdown, look at the most recent one, and it's at worst, it's flat. But in most instances, you're starting to see Democrats declining and Republicans growing, albeit, you know, look, we're a deeply polarized country, so they're not going to be big leaps. But the independent voters, the people who are weakly linked to either party, are figuring out who's responsible for this disaster, and it's the Democrats. They're clear and open about it. They glory in it. We make people hurt enough. The Republicans cave. No, don't think it works that way.
Three races to get through before you have to go. I know. Zoran Mamdani, this emerged from his, on his radio interview from 2 years ago. Listen to this. Cut 29.
Everybody's looking at the polls. They're saying things look good. They're looking at the betting odds. They're saying things look good. That's exactly how Andrew Cuomo felt 7 days until the primary a few months ago.
No, I'm sorry. I should have said 24. Go ahead.
We have to make clear that when the boot of the NYPD is on your neck, it's been laced by the IDF.
I mean, this is just a myriad of crazy statements he has made, most of which are caught on camera. What are we doing here in New York City?
You're about ready to elect a crazy man mayor. Wait for my column tomorrow. You probably not listened to it, but it's well worth listening to the 6 minute, 44 second video that he cut in response to the exchange that he had with Vice President J.D. Vance over Mamdani's aunt supposedly being, nervous after 9/11. I thought it was one of the most astonishing. It was, let me tell you, the video is well done. He's powerful. He's persuasive. He's eloquent. But it is the dumbest thing I think I've seen in a recent campaign, because he basically says the city of New York is full of bigots who hate Muslims, and I've had enough. I do not intend to be, I thought I could be the mayor of a united city, but that was false. That was wrong. I made a mistake. And by God, we're not going to stand for this anymore. I mean, he's depicting New York as a cesspool of bigotry when we know that New York is a city that celebrates the great, cacophony of face and ethnicity and origin and outlook. I mean, this guy is depicting New York as, some hellhole for everybody who is a Muslim. And it is the wrong message for a guy who should try and unite the city of New York. You're going to see it reflected.
Yeah. And in your column,
you're
keep in
mind, reflected in the outcome.
And Carl, he made it up. He didn't have an aunt. It's somebody else who's dead.
His aunt was in Tanzania.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a family friend that he called his aunt. But I didn't get into that because I thought he even worse than that minor misstatement was the essence of what he said. It is one of the most astonishingly short-sighted, irrational diatribes I think I've seen in politics.
Two quick races to look at. Jack Cittarelli, what are the chances of him winning in New Jersey?
Well, he's got a shot. She's a terrible candidate. But the Democrats have a 13-point registration advantage. The fact that it's competitive says something about how weak a candidate she is and how authentic a candidate he is. I've never met him. I've just seen him on television, but I've seen him in the debates. He just seems like a good guy. And in politics, that counts for a lot.
I hope so. And then you have what are the chances Abigail Spanberger gets upset by the Lieutenant Governor Winsom?
Well, look, the polls there have shown consistently, a high single digit, 10 points at most, and maybe a couple of polls above that. The interesting thing is that Spanberger is a much better candidate than Cheryl in New Jersey, but she is hampered by her attorney general candidate, who is this guy.
He's going to lose.
A terrible job. He's going to lose. Jay Jones and Mayeras, the Republican, has done a terrific job as Attorney General and has weathered this quite well and been very effective. I think he's going to win, and that says something about the Commonwealth of Virginia, where there still is a climate of two things: ticket splitting and a belief that people in office ought to be good people who have strong values and not the kind of bigoted comments and nasty personal stuff that Jones said. And they don't particularly like candidates who want to be the chief law enforcement officer who got arrested for traveling 117 miles per hour in your fancy car in a 70 mile an hour zone.
Carl Rove, thanks so much. We'll make sure to read your column in the Wall Street Journal tomorrow. Appreciate it.
Thank you, buddy. The best.
And we'll see him on One Nation on Sunday night. Martha McCallum next.
Both sides, all opinions. It's Brian Kilmeade. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, Martha McCallum, we have a short segment here, and then we'll find on the other side of the hour, right at the other side of the half hour. You're all pumped for your show at 3 o'clock?
Yes. One of the things that we're watching really closely are all these layoffs. For a long time, people thought that AI was just going to replace some of the, lower level jobs.
Mundane jobs.
And now what we're watching is this coming onslaught for white collar workers and people who have maybe been working for the last 5 years out of college. They have accounting jobs, legal jobs. This is going to keep spreading. It's a huge issue in America, and we're going to take that on right at the top of the show today.
14,000 people, I think, laid off at Amazon.
Yeah, I think there's a lot more coming. I think you should keep your eye on the finance industry and other places where they're going to be cutting headcount. There's a big pressure on these companies by their boards to make sure that they're as efficient as possible and that they're ready for the AI age. They're shedding DEI, shedding climate initiatives. And so is Bill Gates, by the way. And this is the wave of the future, and it's going to be very difficult for a lot of people.
I'm fascinated by the climate talk because for the longest time we thought we weren't allowed to ask questions. How dare we question science? No. And now Bill Gates goes, I think we're going to be fine, and I'm more worried about being cold than hot.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yes.
Back in a moment.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back. We got a few more quality minutes with Martha, and then I'm going to be on Outnumbered at the top of the hour. Martha, you are on Outnumbered tonight?
Not today.
But 3 o'clock you're on, right?
I'm on at 3 o'clock.
So we have to talk about this yeah. Bill Gates story.
Yeah.
Bill Gates comes out, and he basically says, you know that whole thing I was telling you about climate change? I'm not really sure it's a big thing. His arms are going everywhere. He says, well, he sunk billions of dollars of his fortune into initiatives to stop global warming because it's a world catastrophe. Now he says it's not. Astonishingly, he now claims that not heat, but the cold is killing more people and more of a threat to humanity. Quote, surprisingly, excess cold is far deadlier, killing nearly 10 times more people every year than heat does. Do you know his latest project was dimming the sun? Because that's how worried he was while he flew around in his private jet. And quick, Martha, if you question climate change, you're an ignoramus.
Absolutely.
How dare you? No, what are we witnessing here?
I mean, AOC said we're all going to be dead in 12 years.
Yes.
I mean, this was Bible for these individuals. In fact, there was a lot of commentary that it sort of did become their religion.
Oh, yeah.
And that if you didn't believe it, or if you had no faith in big air quotes in this whole thing, that you were evil. You were a bad person. You wanted the whole planet to sort of burst into flames and die, and you didn't care about
it. Selfish.
I saw a video this morning of Al Gore, who was really the architect of this movement. You know, remember the movie
that he made?
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, here's a bunch.
This is
Al Gore, AOC, Bernie Sanders, and Greta. And not Van Susteren. Cut 47.
This is the one challenge that could completely end human civilization. And it is rushing at us with such speed and force. It's completely unprecedented.
The world is going to end in 12 years if we don't address climate change.
What the scientists are telling us is if we don't get our act together, the world that you will be bringing your children up in and your grandchildren up in will be increasingly unhealthy and uninhabitable.
It is what we decide now that will define the rest of humanity's future. If we don't, it will be a death sentence to countless of people.
What's she going to do?
I don't know. Well, she was taking a boat to Gaza.
I know she's been spending a lot of time in Gaza. So, yeah. This is so, and it just flies in the face. This actually lines up with what we've seen happening at universities. It's like you have to buy into this dogma or you're a bad person, yeah. Right? And it also ties in with Trump derangement syndrome or anything conservative derangement syndrome. And what we need to get back to is this idea of good scientific debate. Sure, you want to take the climate crisis side of the argument, go ahead. But you're also going to listen to the guy or gal who's on the other side of the equation, and we're going to get some good answers. But, you know, in this, Bill Gates says, if I had to choose, I'm paraphrasing a little bit here, if I had to choose between the climate going up, here it is, I'll let the temperature go up 1/10 of a degree to get rid of malaria. People don't understand the suffering that exists today. Now, he has done a lot of work with malaria. I did a malaria project many years ago. And it is very, very important. So what he's saying is, world disease, poverty, these are more pressing. And the climate will, probably actually not be a catastrophic event.
It's insane. It's insane.
Are they going to cover this everywhere? Like, is this going to be, you know, oh, by the way, the, you know,
I've been
reports
looking at
of
my
your demise
box.
were widely exaggerated.
I've been looking at my quad box. I'm not seeing it
Nothing.
All morning. And this is a 2-day story. More and more is coming out. Now, think about this, Martha. I put this in the same category as Jake Tapper writing his book about the failings of Joe Biden. You know, excuse me? You think there was a problem with Joe Biden? Of course we were telling you that. We were telling you that for 4 years. The guy's not normal. The guy was being mocked
right.
on this debate in 2020 because they thought he was going to lose. And next thing you know, he's supposedly this great guy with this fantastic career and becomes president of the United States. I mean, that's as crazy as Jake Tapper telling us, well, I just did some great reporting. The president wasn't making a lot of decisions and he was falling short and he should have gotten earlier.
Really? Yeah.
So you feel like saying there's got to be some, by the way, I should apologize
you know what, though,
to everyone
I think,
I misled.
You know, it is starting to happen when you see some of the changes that are happening and the movement that's happening in the big news organizations. You see some of this shift as, you know, what ends up happening is that profits start to decline. And that's when the heads of these companies understand, oh, I guess we were supposed to be covering the news.
Yeah.
I guess we were supposed to be actually enlightening people, telling them both sides of the story. And when we didn't do that for, you know, since basically 2016, when we just hammered them with one thing over and over and over again, a lot of them went away. So what did we do wrong? So now they're looking at all of it. They're trying to figure out if they can get to the other side of it, if they can speak to the whole country, something that Fox has known since its inception. And we'll see what happens if they're able to try to right that ship. But this is a huge story. I mean, I remember going back to Benghazi, right? We were covering it. And the other networks were laughing at us, you know, oh, Benghazi. You know, and remember Hillary Clinton saying, yeah. you know, just because some people went out and took a walk, you know, at one night and got into trouble outside and a fire started, whatever she said. You got to open your eyes and you have to cover, you know, you have to cover the whole story. And this is just a screaming example of what we're talking about. Bill Gates saying, you know what? It's no longer actually a hair on fire issue. Enough said.
So what about Al Gore? And if you know what I'm going to do is I'm going to try if I can get through it to watch his movie, because almost everything he said did not come
true.
Inconvenient Truth. They got him, I think, an Emmy or an Oscar or something for best
documentary. I wonder if he'll come on.
Well, I
should invite him.
He's an angry guy. I mean, that guy's an angry guy. I mean, have you ever seen him interviewed? He's isolated, but he's very rich.
Yes.
Extremely rich.
Yes.
So remember when Trump came out of the Paris? This goes to things have changed.
Yeah.
When Trump says, I'm pulling out of the Paris climate change
right.
thing, big deal.
That was one of the earliest moves he made in 2016.
Nobody's talking about that now.
No.
You know, he's saying, why is China and Russia? Well, they're listed as developing nations,
yeah.
and they got to take
oh,
their
please.
Time. We can't really work with them.
Our biggest economic competitor is
yeah.
you know, treated like a developing nation that did not have to accede to the parameters of the Paris Climate Accords. And Trump said, wait a minute, they're like the biggest polluter on the planet. So if they're not in it, it doesn't make any sense for us to
right.
be in it. And their benchmarks were like 2036 for China to even get started on abiding by the tenets of the Paris Climate Accord. But we had to do it right away. I mean, talk about one of the myriad ways that China has come at us, right? That's just one other. You can put that on the list of 20 different ways, everything from fentanyl to AI to stealing intellectual property to, oh, we made a deal in the climate accord that's going to hamstring your companies, but not ours.
Right. So if you can do renewables and you can make it more affordable, you know, they were, again, they're not worried about polluting the environment. They're building these coal plants, but they're also the number one producer of solar panels, right? They are doing renewables. You could do that. Go compete. Go do it and go compete.
100%.
With the whole windmills and everything else that's going on, that's a little dicey because the president's getting pushed back because some of these projects are going on in red states. They hire all these people, and he's like, hey,
look, you
I'm
know
done
what?
With this.
Those red state governors have to answer the questions. Why did you give up an entire span of the Atlantic Ocean to a European company who convinced you that ocean windmills were the future because they signed on for it and they succumbed to the pressure that mm-hmm. existed back then to, you know, sort of give credence to the climate change crew and they wanted to win elections.
Right.
And so they went along with these huge projects, which now not only shouldn't be built, but can't be built. They can't meet the amount that they agreed to build them for. So they've had to renegotiate all the contracts on these things. It's a disaster. It's a disaster. And they also think that there are links between the deaths of whales and other bad issues for the environment. So if you're an environmentalist, why are you supporting ocean windmills?
Right. New Jersey and New York. What do they have in common? Democratic governors. Did you see this study by the Manhattan Institute?
Yeah, but when those deals were done, there was a Republican governor in New Jersey.
Oh, was it Governor Christie?
Connecticut also went along with it. He was part of, you know, signing off on some of these deals, I believe.
So he listens, so maybe he'll call. The Manhattan Institute survey found that Elise Stefanik beats Hochul 43-42. Now, I know it's early and it's just one poll.
Yeah,
the other
poll
was within 2 points. Is that pretty unbelievable that she hasn't even declared yet? I mean, it took forever for Zeldin to get out of double figures, and he was a fantastic candidate.
I know.
She hasn't even declared yet.
I know.
And she's already neck and neck.
It's so interesting, right? I mean, you look at this race. It's like a TV show because Cuomo is now running against Mamdani and Sliwa. Kathy Hochul is the governor of New York because Cuomo got in trouble for these harassment suits that were brought against him.
So accidental governor.
He lost his job. She became governor. Now I look at this poll this morning against Stefanik where she's neck and neck. And in my head, I see Kathy Hochul holding her fist over her head, holding hands with Mamdani. I'm thinking, yeah, this probably isn't a good idea.
What was your perception of Mamdani when you interviewed him one-on-one in your studio?
Look, he is, he smiles a lot. He's a big smiler. He is working very hard to move himself to a place that's modern enough to get elected. He apologized to the police on my show. Obviously, there was already a ton of rhetoric, which we cited to him, of things that he had said about the police being racist and everything else. But we didn't have that soundbite that we saw yesterday, which we played on our show about when the boot of the NYPD is on your neck, it was laced by the IDF.
Which is the most nonsense thing
you
could say.
No, it is nonsense.
And horrific. And,
but you know, I mean, he's young and he just smacks of someone who is willing to sort of, you know, say what he thinks he needs to say to get elected, which all politicians do. But I think it's good that people are being exposed to everything as we get close here. But it still looks like he will win.
I want you to hear what Jon Stewart said. You know, Jon Stewart's extremely smart and sometimes, especially a Democrat against a Democrat, you could be tough and not, you know, sacrifice your party. Listen to what he said. Cut 32.
There are so many different communities that are looking to you. And this, I hate to put it on you, as a bit of a Jackie Robinson moment. And I know that probably wields some weight. But man, oh, man, what an exciting opportunity.
Wow. I don't even have the answer. That question was stunning. Jackie Robinson. Joe, was Jackie Robinson a socialist who hated Jews?
No.
Who doesn't like cops? Are you kidding me? Jackie Robinson should walk on water, what he had to put up with. This guy's not putting up with Jackie Robinson put up
with. And, you know, here's the thing. It is not about his religion. It is about the things that he himself has said. Okay? So the idea that this, you know, we live in a very multicultural city here, right? We have lots of Muslim friends, lots of Jewish friends, lots of Christian friends, okay? It is not, and this is what I want to be, this is not about religion. So Jon Stewart's sitting there basically saying, like, because of your religion, this is a Jackie Robinson moment. But he's negating all of the things that Mamdani has actually said about New York City cops.
Which I thought he would bring up. I really thought he would bring up.
He's a supporter of law enforcement. He did so much good work with Ground Zero and with the people who, you know, were exposed to the burn pits. It's like law enforcement is key for him.
Yeah. So, Martha, one more time for people who missed, who's going to be on your show at 3 p.m.?
So we're going to talk to Mark Tepper about what's going on with the white-collar layoffs, which is a huge story. I also have the Rain family. Their son tragically committed suicide after an unbelievable relationship with the chat bot. That is so frightening, but every parent must be aware of what is happening online.
Thank you, Martha McCallum. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Brian.
I'm going to be back in a little while with more to know. And then top of the hour, Outnumbered. And don't forget, November 1st, Pottstown, Pennsylvania, History, Liberty, and Laughs, streamed on Fox Nation.
Fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Warning for the 19th in Yamamoto. There's a fly ball to deep left center field. Headed back there. It is gone. Vlad Jr. gives the Jays the lead. The franchise face putting the team on his back.
I tell you, this guy's amazing, and he's ready for everything. I mean, this is the first mistake that Ohtani has made, and he didn't get it back.
And by the way, that is World Series game number 4. They tied the series at 2 games apiece. Toronto Blue Jays win in Los Angeles after losing a heartbreaker in 18 innings. Tied for the longest game, along with another game the Dodgers played in versus Red Sox in 2018. But it was the Dodgers who win dramatically. And congratulations to them. But now they went up 2-1. But last night it was tied at 2-2. It makes me wonder if there is indeed more to know.
More to know. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen, made for your brain.
Yeah, final score was 6-2 Blue Jays. And by the way, that guarantees that the Toronto Blue Jays will get a chance to go back home to win the series or lose it. Next, Bill Gates. This is my favorite story of the day. Makes major climate reversal after years of yelling at people like me and maybe you that the world was ending. How dare you not do know it and understand it, while he flew around putting millions of his dollars into these programs on his private jet all around the world, living in these huge mansions. He wanted us to know that the world was going on fire. He was actually working on things to dim the sun. He said it was our only hope. And now, astonishingly, Gates now points out that our greatest fear, if anything, is that it's going to be too cold, not heat. He says being cold is a far greater threat to humanity. Surprisingly, excessive cold is far deadlier, killing nearly 10 times more people. He came out and said, the Microsoft founder, he said billions into his fortune, climate change will have serious consequences, particularly for people in the poorest countries. It will not lead to humanity's demise. Al Gore, did you hear that? Stop with the cash register noise where you cash in and say the world has a fever. Your show, your movie that got you, I think, an Academy Award for documentary is total fiction. The world should have ended by now. And think about how they torture people and the Paris deal. What a joke. Next, Gambino crime boss was told stay in jail. We think you're going to try to intimidate witnesses. Remember last week with the big gambling bust that talked about two things? You got the card game, which was fraudulent, with the X-ray machine and the card shuffler machine that was all allowed other guys to win. Well, the mob was involved, four families involved, including Anthony Ruggiero. His lawyer had pushed for a $5 million bond insured by his family and friends, but the Gambino mobster will stay in jail because they think he's going to intimidate people to not testify against him. Next, Paris prosecutors deeply regret disclosing the Louvre suspect arrest. As an ex-thief reveals, he warned the Louvre of security weaknesses around crown jewels. Paris prosecutor Laurie Bouchard said the information made public about the arrest makes it harder to catch the other two guys. Oops. They inspected this guy, David Duchos. Talks like he said he was a pro. He said he told them over and over again the windows were susceptible. They said the windows show a glaring weakness, and for any jewel thief, it would be a piece of cake. Well, here's the exact quote to the AP. Have you seen the windows? You can imagine anything. People in disguise slipping in through those windows. Through the windows, even from the roofs, there are plenty of ways to get in. Next, homework might be history. It's facing an existential crisis. Why? Because everybody's doing it with AI, which means they're not doing it. 84% of high school students use artificial intelligence for their schoolwork. According to a study, 69% of high school students use ChatGPT to help with school assignments and homework. There's got to be a way for them to find out. I think there are some from Hallmark signs, but there's got to be something you can do in your school system because homework is necessary. I don't want 4 hours. But it is indeed necessary, I think. By the way, Kai Trump announces, even though she hasn't been to college yet, still a high school senior, she'll get a special exemption to go to an LPGA tour event. It'll be in Florida, the Pelican Golf Club. Good luck with that.